Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak, with Ilan Azulay, only on LA Talk Radio.
Shalom, Boker Tov, welcome, good morning. The sound of nothing pounds in my chest. Breathing the chemicals from past breaths and vaporizing their aroma, annihilating them. Filling my belly with sound from you, from beneath, from above. Beneath all the layers you crack and start shining. That frequency that muffled your sound. Being in time was impossible. Being in now was not imaginable. From all the ways in them I crawled, from all the lines in them I followed, I crossed the line, and I am here. Hareini mekabel al atzmi et mitzvat aseh של ואהבת לרעך כמוך. I hereby accept on myself the due commandment, the utterance of love your neighbor, your friend, your gardener, your partner, in the same way that you express love to yourself, focusing first on yourself, being in joy where you are so you can omit the light to others. A piece of you.
אם את אמיתית, תגישו. וקולך מפייס, מנפץ מחסומים איתנים, מזרזת זרימה של דם, של זימה, טורפת את כל הקלפים. צמחים מטפסים על קירות תאומים, גם אני מחפשת מקום שצמח, אם אין בי מלבד שממה בתוכי, אולי תני לי רק עוד פיסה בה. אם את אמיתית, תגישו, כי מאסתי באותם כיסופים. הלילה צעיר, אך נפשי די לאה, מלתהות על אותם קנקנים. צמחים מטפסים על קירות תאומים, גם אני מחפשת מקום שצמח, אם אין בי מלבד שממה בתוכי, אולי תני לי רק עוד פיסה בה.
Welcome to Abracadabra, Create What You Speak. I'm Ilan Azulay. I'm your host, spiritual mentor, and a sound therapist for you who are ready to reclaim your power. And today, hello, we're having Julie Bergman again to enlighten the spirit here and talk about some interesting things.
Good morning.
Good morning. How
or
are
good
you?
Good afternoon, actually.
Yeah, well, yeah. I get up late, so it's morning. And welcome. Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm wonderful. And so today is, there are many things are happening.
It's a very busy day.
Very busy day. International Women's Day.
Yes.
That is a big thing. Not because of the day, but because of the shift that is happening.
Hopefully, yeah.
Well, I think it's happening. It's happening already, actually. Don't you?
Well,
it happened.
I think it depends. This was also a big week for people that wondered why there were 6 women candidates for president, and now there are none.
So there are none.
So that was a little bit of a reflective moment for people, for men too. I mean, I really believe that the shift you're talking about, I think, is happening, because I do think that there's been a recognition that there are inequities that are not necessarily fair, and those need to be acknowledged, examined, and then changed.
Well, but this is a start, actually, where there is recognition, not just from the place of practicality, jobs, places, or offices, but also it starts from a spiritual, because everything, as I see that, everything physical has a spiritual reason and cause. And so there was this stir up already of let's rock the boat of the patriarch, right? And let's move things around. So there are things that are happening on both levels.
Yes. You know,
it's starting from that spiritual, that mental place, and then it manifests outside. Or do you think it happened the other way around? Because sometimes that can help.
I think what's true about the spiritual element that you raise is I think men and women together have to make the commitment that women and men need to be co-equal leaders, which doesn't mean that they do it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
It just means that they both have leadership qualities that are unique and important to be reflected in the society we live in, because people tend to be more comforted when they see themselves reflected in leadership in some way, whether for good or for bad.
Well, yeah, like identifying with a character in a movie.
Exactly.
It's like identify with that character. And so we are recognizing things, but one person cannot reflect the same thing for everybody. That's why there are so.
But I think men and women both have to look at their own role they play in where women's leadership is. In this country in particular at the moment, but worldwide, you know, I think it's not just about men placing women in a place that isn't exalted.
Men's placing, so it's still coming from the concept of men place where.
And, well, I think that's part of the problem. I think part of the problem is women are subject to that thinking also, is what I'm saying. In other words, we've all lived together in a patriarchy for thousands of years, and it doesn't change with only one gender deciding that it's time for a shift. It comes from a cultural, societal, spiritual, intellectual, educational shift across the board, and I think we're still in the midst of that.
Yeah, we're very much in the midst of that. Before we continue, I'm having here Julie Bergman comes here often. She's a writer, a filmmaker, and wonderful. She did a wonderful documentary called Harmony. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. Film was completed 5 years ago, and it's an environmental film that, rather than discussing the problems that we all know exist, it tries to look for solutions, and to remind us that until we remember what we always used to know, which is that everything is connected.
But we forgot.
The holistic problems can only be solved by holistic solutions.
Hmm. And it ties into, because Mother Earth is the feminine, and so it ties very, very beautifully, I mean, that's the way of creation, into this. So that's why I see that International Women's Day is not only women's as a gender, because some sites will call it, will refer to it, or many people refer to it as a gender. And that's really where it started, right? With the gender. It started in the 1500s? French.
I think I read that it started in the 1800s as a way of recognizing women and their kind of unique place in the world.
Yeah.
And it's evolved since then, obviously. And then today, I was saying earlier, it's funny because today's daylight savings time. So in case you haven't changed your clocks, we lost an hour today.
So they did it on purpose.
So they did it on purpose. They made it March 8th on purpose so that we would have one
you
less
see,
hour of International
see,
Women's Day.
Even when we're even when there is okay, yes, still try to shave another hour from your
exactly. So we're an hour less special today.
The crown in shape. The crown, yeah.
Not really.
Well, but and also tomorrow evening is Purim. Is Jewish holiday Purim.
So what are you going to dress up as?
Esther.
I love that.
Maybe I'll dress as Esther.
Oh, that's so good, because you
Esther.
Can tie in the Women's Day thing to your Purim costume. This is good.
You know, so here's the thing. It's something that I, only people who know me for a very, very, very long time, since I was a kid. I think my mom wanted a girl, actually.
Aww.
Yeah, I remember one Purim, she dressed me up as a fair lady. Remember the movie?
Very well.
I've never seen the movie.
Oh, it's a great movie.
I've never seen the movie, but
Audrey Hepburn.
But she dressed me as, I think I never saw the movie because I had a personal vendetta against this whole thing, because at the age I was 8 or something like that, 8, 9, 10, and with the hat like this, going like that, and the wig and the makeup.
She had makeup on you too?
Everything, wow. The whole thing. People thought I was like a girl.
So
like,
how did you feel? Did you feel like a girl?
No, I felt like at least nobody recognizes me. Or that's what I thought, at least, right? Yeah, but it was the whole thing. But the funny thing is the shoes.
What kind of shoes?
Because I didn't have women's shoes,
yeah.
Right?
Uh-huh.
So I wore some kind of a boy's shoes. That it was kind of funny. The funny. Looking at it today, I have one picture of that. I have one picture of that whole.
It's funny because, you know, I think people would make a very different assumption about a man that chooses a costume as a woman than they would a woman choosing a costume
as a man. That's interesting. I want to give the
phone
number.
Like, maybe I'll go as a man to Purim tomorrow and see what happens.
Interesting. Yeah, maybe I will do man as Esther. You know, we have a part in, before I continue, because I forget. Let me give you the phone number if you want to ask, to join in, to share your place in the world, your where your light is shining from. What is your gift today?
Or you could tell me what I should dress up as tomorrow for Purim.
There you go.
It doesn't have to be so serious. It can also be just fun.
That's true. Fun. Without fun, it's not fun.
No. There's no joy without fun.
That's right. 323-203-0815. 323-203-0815. But wait.
No. There's more.
So, you know, that's interesting that there is an assumption that a different assumption that when a man dresses as a woman versus, and I think that comes from the same place of how women are perceived in a masculine world, in a patriarchal world, right? How it's perceived. That's interesting.
So I'm going to wear, unless somebody has a better idea and calls in, I'm going to wear a suit and a tie tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
See what happens.
Suit and a tie. No, I think it'll fit you, suit and a tie.
Really?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Nothing. No, that is a different reaction to the reaction.
But I do think it's true. I mean, I think one of the things that's been really interesting for me when, you know, for years I was in a kind of office job, meaning I would go every day, have meetings in an office, was an executive at a film company. And this was in the 80s and in the 90s. And there really was a very clear message that we needed to be asexual in a way in order to be successful. And I'm sure I'll get a lot of flack from people for saying that, but you're looking at it now from a very different lens. But if you look at it from the way we were perceived, you know, people didn't wear, you know, long flowy skirts and or tight skirts with you know, our legs hanging out if we wanted to be neutral in the room. And it was clear that being neutral in the room was a prerequisite in a way for being taken seriously. So you can interpret that any way you want, but the obvious interpretation is that tamping down our femininity, not necessarily being more masculine, but tamping down our femininity was a cleaner, clearer way of being taken, quote unquote, seriously. And so we all did that. We all wore suits every day to work.
Well, it was also, yeah, it was because it was dominated and it was dictated by the ruling force, so to speak, right?
Yeah.
So it was, Next. All right. Should we talk about this?
Yes. Okay. That's a good segue.
I'm going to talk about this. All right, so what we have here, and this is for Purim, right? Purim is a Jewish holiday where...
Would you like help with that?
With the thing?
Women are sometimes better at opening things than men.
Probably. So the story is that in Persia, in Iran, in Persia at that time... the Jews were facing another annihilation potential, and Esther and Mordechai, who were in the kingdom there, and Esther married Achashverosh, the king of Persia, and so the Jews were saved from Haman, whatever you call him in English, the dictator, he was the right hand to the king. So he was like his, but he hated the Jews, so he wanted to annihilate them. And Esther played a trick on him, and anyway, he got exposed, hanged, and yada yada. So the Purim is also considered actually. Spiritually a higher level than Yom Kippur.
Really?
Yeah. Yom Kippur is the atonement day, the spiritual atonement day in Jewish calendar, between oneself and the place, as it's called. The place means God. The place, because God is in every place. Between the place, between the creation, earth, our relationship to earth, those kind of things, and also the relationship between one and another and the person. And there are two forgivenesses, so to speak. Hmm. The one between the place that God and creation forgive in the way that we understand it. And between the man and the person, God cannot forgive. Only that person can forgive. So Purim, why is Purim considered a higher spiritually? ask why.
Why is Purim considered spiritually?
Yeah, since you asked. Well, because this is the time where the Jews decided on their own proactively to approach God in a greater sense, to approach a creation. In Kippur, this is the day you're mandated, or this is this is not per se a choice.
So right? There's the internal day and the external day, maybe.
They're both internal.
One comes from inside of us, and one comes from outside of
us. That's right.
That's what I meant.
Okay. Yeah. That's great. Internal and external. So Purim is more internal, proactively internal. So when we were kids, and it's tradition to eat, in English they call them Hamantashen and Ozne Haman, which translates in Hebrew to the ears of Haman.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they
say. The bad guy.
Because we were told that his ears look like that, right? So they have this. Now, I get it maybe for Napoleon because his hat looked like it.
Yes.
But I don't know. So here's the thing. And this is something that I want to know what you think about. Poppy. So this is dough and the inside there is poppy. So who saved the Jews, really? Esther, right? She was the one, wasn't Mordechai. Mordechai actually objected to the guy and was just sitting at the gate. But the person who saved the Jews, the person who sold or was forced, because at that time, think about this, at that time, she couldn't say, okay, I'm going to marry him to save my family.
Mm-hmm.
Women didn't have...
No.
A power of choice to make a choice. Just say, okay, king likes you, give your body for the Jews. You know, in to put it bluntly.
Mm-hmm.
So Esther saved the Jews. The femininity, the power of a woman to be in all places at once, and especially if it comes from her choice. And the fear of the patriarch from the creation, the power of the feminine, is to force her into that. But nevertheless, that is what saved us. Now, that looks like, right?
Yes, it does.
It does look like a vagina.
Yes.
Right? And this is what I believe the symbol is to remember that the feminine, the woman, everything actually would start from a feminine, from the birthing. And so that, and it tastes good too, actually.
Also, the if woman. You want to elevate the the chumantashen, you could say that it has three points.
Three points.
Body, soul, and mind.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Body. Mind, body, soul. There you go. You know, there is a song in...
I just made that up.
That's great. That's great.
If you Google it and you don't find it, it's just because I didn't Google anything. I just made it up.
But it's a good... It is. Because we can look at it, right? We're making meaning of that. Do you want one?
No.
Okay. Because if I eat, I won't be able to... to converse. So...
We'll
I don't know. There was a song that we had about the hat that has three corners, you know, and mm-hmm. then you omit a word each time. So I don't know where they came from. The ears of Haman, you know. This is where I say that there's so many things that were hidden, and I don't know, probably purposefully in religion, that are actually coming from. From authentic sources.
Maybe. Again, don't Google this because I'm making it up. But maybe it was always meant to be the symbol of Esther, but they couldn't say that that's what it was. So they said that it was the ears
of
Haman.
Well, yeah, no, they wouldn't say that. Yeah.
They just had to make up something to cover up what it really was.
Something, yeah. I mean,
right?
They couldn't say really what it is, right?
No.
I don't know. When did they started with this? It's interesting. I never... Never figured that. Never looked it up when it started.
Well, if you play a song at some
if
point,
play a song,
we can look it up and then come back and tell everybody what
so
we
let's
find
see.
Out.
Exactly.
Like maybe a Purim song.
A Purim song.
Is there such a thing?
I don't know. Let's see. This is a Purim song. A Purim song. Let's put a Purim song. Oh, let's put the... I can't put probably copyrights.
Well, if it's an old folk song,
no,
then it's going, in the public domain.
No, I will put a... I was going to put Adam Sandler, but that's probably...
It's Hanukkah, though.
Oh, that's Hanukkah.
Yeah.
He didn't do a Purim.
No, he should.
He should do a Purim.
Adam, honey.
Do a Purim.
Come on.
Do a Purim song.
He could do a whole thing about Esther and
Esther,
the king.
The whole thing. You know, we have, you know, the show that I played in. So there is a part there where the crook character is telling everybody a story how the helicopter came down and who came out of the helicopter. It says... Madonna, and then I said, who? And he says, Esther. And that's how I recognize who she is.
Mm.
It's the Esther thing. Purim songs.
My daughter's Hebrew name is Esther because she was born during Purim.
That's right, she was born during
Purim. It's just a little tidbit of information that probably doesn't interest anyone, but I thought,
Esther.
Well, you know.
Well, it's
as long
it's
as
a
we're
very,
talking about Esther.
As long as we're talking, let's see. Purim songs. There we go. Purim songs. Oy vey.
There's a song called Oy Vey?
No, but might
that
as well.
That would be funny.
Might as well. Let's see. I don't know. This comes here. Looks like a very Jewish teenager's kids. You know what? Let's give them a thing here. No. Never mind. Forget the Purim song.
Okay. Sorry.
We're going to play something else. And... Another thing that ties also in the Purim and this weekend and is really the place of choices, the place of where we are when we make choices. And how do we know if we're making the right choice? How do we know if we're making the right choice for something, for a decision that we're contemplating about? How do we know this is the right choice? How do we know, you know, it's part of the journey to go through that experience and to see does it serve my bigger intention, my bigger picture? Livchor nachon, Amir Dadon.
בסוף הכל מתנקז אליי, עניין של זוויות. אני לא מבין רמזים אולי, צבעים ואותיות. מבט חטוף אל עצמי ודי, רק לא להסתכל. מה שבפנים כבר בפנים מדי, קוראים לזה הרגל. מתי אלמד לבחור נכון? להאמין, לראות שטוב, בלי להביט שוב לאחור, לבחור נכון. אותו הכל מדבר אליי, פוגש בי בלילות, הולך מבלי להבין לאן. האם אדע לחזור? מבט חטוף מסביב ודי, יותר כבר לא אפור. יש ילד שמסתכל עליי, קוראים לזה לגדול. מתי אלמד לבחור נכון? להאמין, לראות שטוב. שטוב בלי לה...
להתחבר אליי עניין של חלומות אני מתעורר בדיוק בזמן אולי אוכל לזכור אומרים יש מי ששומר עליי נותן לי את הכוחות עוד לא מצאתי תשובה אבל קוראים לזה לחיות
This was Amir Dadon, Choosing Right. Yeah. Well, here's the thing that I talked to us about on Friday, as far as when we are coming to... when we are experiencing, when we're choosing to be in an experience. Right? So, so when we're having an experience, when we're going through something, we're going through a meeting, we're going through a journey, a certain part of... an experience we're going through even in ceremonies when we do work people come into places and become and they allow themselves with some help with different modalities to shed the layers shed the layers or the filters that are holding them back from seeing beyond the boundaries that they are. So when you are in a transformative experience, a transformative experience doesn't necessarily mean like, you know, you're going to a transformative workshop, but it is a transformative experience. You're going through something that causes you to shift, to be in a place that is not unfamiliar. And that usually happens in first experiences where something is very profound. Something is very profound. And you remember that experience as being a very profound, very strong, filling a lot of places that you were seeking, you know, when a lot of places that you were, that are missing or seeking or you need. And you are in an immersive experience like that for, let's say, a day or 2 days or even a week or whatever that is. It could be a meeting. It could be a workshop. It could be a relationship. It could be anything. Okay. Well, relationship is not really, but...
I know what you mean.
You know, I want to explain myself. It's not about, it's about an experience that is out of, let's say, an ordinary day life. Okay. Something that is happening is very profound. So what happened is that many times after that experience, we're trying to preserve certain aspects of that experience. So taking one thing, let's say a connection to a person or a connection to an event that happened during that experience. So what is happening, we're trying to preserve that. And once we've ended the initial experience, we're trying to see what kind of ways can I preserve that? Can I keep it with me? I want to keep it coming. So this place is coming from the place of a need. It's coming from a place of a need of, I need this. And when we're coming from a place of a need, then we become the need. So it is all the choices that I could make, I'm making it through the filter of what I need. Mm-hmm. And now that experience, if I'm not getting what I want from that experience after it ended, let's say I want to preserve a certain connection or certain, and it doesn't work, then suddenly that experience is tainted. Mm. Then suddenly I have this perception about this experience that caused me to be in this place. And it goes hand in hand with a place of a need, because when I'm also in a place of a need, I will never see myself as somebody who is contributing to something that happened. Mm-hmm. I will always blame somebody else. So in a place of a need is also being in a place of a need, but also projecting on others what you're not seeing in self. Right? So what is happening is actually fragmentation or isolation, as we talked about in Nicole, right? So it's fragmentation and isolation. So you're fragmenting the whole, and now you're isolating a piece. Mm-hmm. Because it has to have first the fragmentation for the isolation to, mm-hmm. right? Because the isolation is really isolated from the whole. As it starts fragmenting, pieces start falling apart. And do you know what I mean?
I think as you were speaking, I was thinking about when in my life have I had those experiences. Mm-hmm. And in each time, there's sort of one common denominator.
What was
whether
that?
It's work or a workshop, or it doesn't matter what the environment is.
You mean where you're trying to hold something?
No, where you're in an experience that's really intense of some kind that has a finite period of time affixed to it from an outside source. Mm-hmm. Either it's a workshop or a work experience, mm-hmm. or something that, mm-hmm. you know, has a beginning, middle, and an end.
Mm-hmm.
And usually those experiences are such that they're isolated from your everyday life.
That's right. That's
so
right.
The patterns are different. The rhythms are different. Things fall away that don't apply to that experience. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So you're in this place. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's a work thing. Sometimes it's, you know, in my case, you're on a project of some kind and it's like when you were in the play.
Yeah.
You're in an intense experience,
right.
with a group of
That's
people,
right.
for
right.
a period of time. There's a schedule affixed to that experience that doesn't continue after the play is over.
That's
so
right.
After the play is over, there's an adjustment period everybody goes through that's both physical, because now you don't have the same schedule, literally, but also emotional and spiritual, because you've made all kinds of, all kinds of connections with people. You've had all kinds of experiences you wouldn't otherwise have, and you won't have in other places in your life. And that's where I think, mm-hmm. what you're saying about saying, I want to hold on to this. How do I hold on to this when I'm not in the same environment anymore? That's where in workshops, for example, it would be really, and I think a lot of spiritual teachers do this, where they say, how can you take this feeling, this thought, this mm-hmm. idea with you into the real, you know, rhythm of your life? That's the question.
So here's the thing. It's not about encouraging taking that thing. I don't see it that way. I see it as, in order to experience that, to have, now usually that happens in the first time. If it started becoming a repetitive experience, the same experience, you did a workshop, the mm-hmm, initial, mm-hmm. right? Like I did a play, right? It was a intense 6 months of rehearsing and all that. And then if I would do it again, another play, you know, it becomes, it's nice, but the effect in its fullness happened really only in the beginning, only the first time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the first time, it was that initial a sharpness of the experience, like in Hebrew, the chedva, the comes from the initial jolt.
Yeah,
that's right. The initial jolt of the experience. It's going, it's like that kind of thing. So I'm not saying about taking it, because if I'm trying to isolate that experience, now things happen. Yeah, there are connections. You can preserve certain things, but I'm saying to see how that experience, and how the absence or the outside of the experience is beautiful just as being in the experience.
I agree with that. And I think that that's the key. In other words, to be able to experience whatever it is for what it is in the context of what it is.
Yeah.
And not be so attached to what happens afterward.
Mm-hmm.
but knowing that you've shifted or changed because of that experience, and watching yourself a little bit from the outside in a way to see how you integrate back into whatever your normal routine is, because that part of it, I think, is a natural expectation. How do I integrate whatever this experience is that I just had and not leave it behind, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and not integrate it into, especially if it was a positive experience, mm-hmm. positive, not necessarily meaning joyful, mm-hmm. but profound in some way.
And this is interesting, because this is a year of integration. This is a year of integration in certain teaching in shamanism. Also.
What a nice segue that was.
Yeah. That was a good segue. Good job. So year of integration. What a year of integration means? It's last year was year of information. We're getting a lot of information from all over. And we've been doing it for a while. We've been in that for a long time. And this time is not about how much you know, how many books you've read, how many of the, but it's really taking our, because we are connected, so our collective consciousness and our trusting in ourselves, and how do we integrate the shadows, how do we integrate those places in us that we all the time tried to isolate or put in a drawer, right? Mm-hmm. And even a situation like we're talking about, trying to isolate an experience, being in a place of a need, to recognize that, how do we integrate that place of a need into a healthy place, into a healthy place? If I want to preserve something, how do I work on shifting everything? And I believe that the way to shift that is to look where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. It's to look where it's coming from. You know, people tell me, it's like, oh, you dig. I love digging, but I feel that going around the mountain or above the mountain is not the same like going through the mountain. And there is a lot of fear and a lot of power. I'm going to say power. There's a lot of power to do that. And it takes a lot of courage to do that. And
how do you define need, by the way?
How do I define need? Well, there is the need that I would need something, like I need to drink water. But then we're talking about a different need. Where I look at it like an axis, right? Like an XY axis, right? Where on the axis there are different points. There is ego, there is the need, there is a fear, there's all kinds of things. And every time one goes out of balance, the other ones shift down. So mm-hmm. So you have to balance to kind of bring it to as much as quality. Need is need is referred to our where the liver is, all our desires, all our need, kidney, and like the sacral chakra, mm-hmm. right? And that belongs to the physical. That is part of the physical body. So when I know that something is good for me, or when something is beneficial, or let's take if there is an addiction, let's take an addiction as the extreme representation for what we're talking about need. The person really doesn't want to be addicted. Mm-hmm. You know they have issues with drinking or drugs or whatnot. So it's an understanding, but then their memory, their bodily memory, their animalistic memory, their desires are really overpowering. Now, that know what I mean? Need, the need is there, but when it overpowers, or when it causes us to make choices that come from that place. Like if I have a fear of being in front of people, right? Say I have a fear mm-hmm. of being in front of people, I will not go to this meeting or those parties or this place or this place. So automatically I eliminated myself so many possibilities that mm-hmm. could happen by meeting the people, while I'm afraid of seeing people, and maybe I'm looking for kind of an opportunity in business or something. So it's like sitting at home and saying God will help and not doing anything.
Yeah.
It's not going to fall down, right? So it is our requirement to be in the effort, to make an effort. So to make an effort towards where we want. So the need is, we all have needs. Is do we allow the need, or do we give our power to the need? Do we become the need, or do we harmonize it and we integrate it and we see, okay, I know that I want it. Let me from this place see how can I shift it to a place that is not taking me to my body. Now it's hard.
I also think that what you were saying earlier about choices, you know, is the work that we try to do on understanding our needs allow them to rule over our choices?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's whatever they are.
That's the choice. That's how we're looking at them.
Hopefully, as we get more experienced at being able to kind of neutrally look at our personality imprint,
mm-hmm.
and our past and our stories and our trauma and all the things that make up a person,
mm-hmm.
I would say needs are a reflection of the unresolved places of all of those things.
That's a good one.
And
yeah.
Then we have to kind of look at ourselves when we're making choices in life, whatever those choices yeah. are, through the lens of am I being guided by what I need, mm-hmm. and how that need mm-hmm. is defined by mm-hmm. all the things that I've been through in my life, all the disappointments, mm-hmm. all the things that have made me feel good, mm-hmm. all the things that have made me feel good for a minute but then didn't. And can I make choices where I don't deny the need, because the need is there all the time. You can't mm-hmm. deny that you need things, even though people tell us, I don't need anything. You know, yeah. I can do whatever.
When somebody starts with, I don't need, that's exactly
yeah,
what they...
exactly. So you first have to say, look, my needs are always going to be a part of this equation when I'm making a choice.
Mm-hmm.
But is it healthy for me in this particular situation or that particular situation to allow my needs to be the governor of my choice? And I would argue... probably not.
Yeah, there's no need to argue. There's no need to argue, because it's like, in a different words, what place do we inhabit in ourselves when we make a choice? When we make a choice of any kind, where are we?
Yeah.
Are we in a place of fear, need, that is controlling? So no, because I want that, because I need that, I'm not going to make this. And it's like, yeah.
And maybe that's... you know, the boring way of putting it is, maybe that's what growing up is really all about, is being able to say that the needs I have are sacred and important and have a seat at the table,
mm-hmm.
right? But they don't get to sit in all the chairs.
They don't get to do everything. They don't get to.
No, they don't get to do everything. They get to be heard and respected and nurtured and understood.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't get to be the boss. Because the minute they're the boss, then all of the other filters that help me make choices that are healthy,
mm-hmm.
that have longevity, that can be built upon in the future, are masked because they have no voice. It's like being in a discussion with somebody and all they're doing is screaming and yelling and you can't get a word in edgewise. That's usually what the need personality is.
Well, that's...
I just made that up. Don't Google it. I just made it
well,
up.
Well, it's logical. It is what it is. It is logical. It's in different ways. It's like, what place do we inhabit in ourselves? Is it governing our choice? Do we see everything? So that is what we're talking about when I was saying we become the need.
Yes.
So, or the need becomes us. There was a movie like She Becomes, I forgot, whatever, becomes her. But that becomes us, and then we're making choices from that filter.
And sometimes workshops are really good at helping us to uncover those truths about mm-hmm. ourselves. And then we have to re-enter and integrate that. And mm-hmm. I think that's where people have, you know, understandable difficulty, right? Because they're faced in that isolated experience with all sorts of things that are true that they don't look at on a daily basis.
Mm, that's true. Yeah. Well said, well said. So today, make the right choices for you, right?
Okay.
And
I'm going to be a man tomorrow for porn.
There you go.
That's my choice.
So I think I'm going to, I was going to dress as Yatsik, but I think that's, well, maybe I can do a Yatsik.
Maybe you should be a woman version of Yatsik.
Yatska. Yatska. Yatska.
A new character is being introduced boy. Into the thing.
So we have to change the accordion. No, I think the accordion is
we have to find an accordion that we can.
The accordion is a reflective of the Yatskosh family. Anyway, so thank you very much.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure. Thank you. It was fun.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for you. Thank you for how you are, for who you are, for when you are, and why. And while sometimes the why is not important, it is important today because you are here because there is a reason. And there is a reason if you're listening, there is a reason you're listening to. And everything is happening for you. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful week. This is your way. Always been your way. And never give up. And of course, this is Mati Kaspi. You shall see your way. Have a wonderful week. Leitot.
Bye.
Listening to Abracadabra, create what you speak with Elon Azulay, only on